Welcome back to Science TLDR, the show where we take those dense scientific papers and break them down into something you can actually understand.
And hopefully enjoy along the way.
That's the goal. And today, we're diving into a paper that's causing quite a stir in the cancer research world.
It's called, Coordinated Inheritance of Extrachromosomal DNAs in Cancer Cells. And it was just published in Nature last week.
Nature, huh? So we're dealing with the big leagues here.
Absolutely. Top-tier science. And it's tackling a pretty fundamental question about those extrachromosomal DNAs, or XCDNAs, as we call them in the biz. You know, those circular pieces of DNA that hang out outside the chromosomes?
Right, right. XDNAs. We've talked about them before on the show. They're often packed with oncogenes, those genes that can really put the pedal to the metal when it comes to cancer growth.
Exactly. But how they actually get replicated and passed down through cell divisions, that's been a bit of a mystery. Until now, that is.
Okay, so this paper, it's shedding some light on that mystery.
More than shedding light, it's like turning on a spotlight and revealing a whole choreographed dance routine happening with these XDNAs.
A dance routine?
Well, maybe not a full-on tango, but they're definitely not just floating around randomly. This paper shows that they're actively co-segregating during cell division, basically moving together in a synchronized way.
Now, that's pretty wild. I mean, we used to think XDNAs were kind of like lone wolves, replicating and dividing on their own.
Yeah, it's a pretty big shift in our understanding. And the researchers have brought out the big guns in terms of evidence. Single-cell sequencing, live cell imaging, even mathematical modeling, they're not messing around.
So they've really built a strong case for this coordinated inheritance thing.
They really have, and the implications are huge, especially when you consider that they found over a quarter of tumors with XDNA actually have multiple different types coexisting.
Multiple types?
Yep. Often carrying different oncogenes, too. And get this, these different XDNAs aren't physically linked. They're totally separate entities. But their copy numbers within a single cell, they're incredibly correlated, way beyond anything you'd expect if it was just random chance.
Hold on. So we've got multiple types of XDNAs, each with their own oncogenes, all hanging out in the same cell, and they're all replicating in sync. It's almost like they're working together, right?
That's a fascinating thought, isn't it? It's like they've formed some sort of alliance, a little XDNA community within the tumor.
I like that, an XDNA community. Sounds kind of cozy. Except, you know, for the whole cancer thing.
Right. Cozy's not exactly the word I'd use. But the idea of cooperation between these XDNAs is definitely something the authors touch on, especially when they talk about their finding of an altruistic enhancer, XDNA.
An altruistic enhancer? What's that all about?
Well, this particular XDNA doesn't have any oncogenes itself, but it contains enhancer sequences, which can actually boost the expression of genes on other XDNAs.
Oh, I see. So it's like this enhancer XDNA is playing a supporting role, helping the other XDNAs do their oncogenic thing.
Exactly. And the fact that this enhancer XDNA is so prevalent in the cell line they studied and that it's co-segregating with the oncogene-carrying XDNAs, well, it really adds fuel to this fire of potential cooperation, doesn't it?
It does. It's like this enhancer saying, hey, we're all in this together. Let's make this tumor grow.
A bit of a disturbingly efficient team, you could say.
Definitely not the kind of team you want to be cheering for. But before we get too caught up in this idea of cooperation, let's back up a bit. How did the researchers actually arrive at this conclusion of co-segregation? It's not like they just looked at a cell and saw it happening, right?
No, they definitely had to get creative. One of the coolest techniques they used was live cell imaging. They tagged different XDNA species with fluorescent markers so they could literally watch them replicate and divide in real time.
Wow, that's incredible. It's like watching a tiny cellular movie unfold. Mm. So what did they actually see when they watched these XDNAs divide?
Well, what they saw was striking. Different XDNA species all clustered together during mitosis, that process of cell division. And then, as the cell split, these clusters moved in a coordinated manner into the new daughter cells.
So they're like sticking together throughout the whole process.
Pretty much. It really does look like they're holding hands and refusing to be separated.
Okay, so visually, they're seeing this coordinated movement. But we know that correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did they rule out other possible explanations for why these xDNAs might be found together. Like maybe certain xDNAs just replicate more efficiently than others.
They thought of that too. They used single-cell sequencing techniques to measure the copy numbers of different xDNA species in individual cells.
Single-cell sequencing, that's where things get really granular. You're basically getting a genomic snapshot of each individual cell, right?
Exactly. And what they found was that this copy number correlation, this tight relationship between the abundance of different xDNA species, it persisted across different cell lines and even in actual tumor samples from patients.
So it's not just an artifact of growing cells in a lab dish. This coordinated abundance is happening in real tumors, in real patients.
It's the real deal. And it suggests that there's something more going on here than just simple preferential replication.
All right, so we've got the visual evidence from the live cell imaging, and we've got the quantitative data from the single cell sequencing, both pointing to this coordinated inheritance. It's a pretty compelling case. But the big question is, what's actually driving this synchronized movement? What's the mechanism behind all this cellular choreography?
That's where things get even more interesting, because the authors found a link between transcription, you know, that process of turning DNA into RNA, and xDNA co-segregation.
Hold on. So you're telling me that the very act of gene expression, of making RNA from these xDNA genes, could be influencing their physical movement within the cell?
That's what the data suggest. They found that when they inhibited transcription, specifically using a compound called triptylide, it significantly reduced xDNA co-segregation.
So basically, shut down transcription, disrupt the dance.
Precisely. And they didn't just stop there. They even narrowed down the effect to the initiation of transcription, the very beginning of the process. So it's not just about the transcriptional machinery physically tethering the scDNAs together. There's something more specific going on at that initiation step.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
But I have to ask, how do we know it's not just an off-target effect of this triptylide? That stuff can be pretty messy, right?
Good point. They were very careful to address that. They used a couple of different approaches to confirm that the effect was specific to transcription initiation. First, they used a different inhibitor that only targets the elongation phase of transcription, the part after initiation. And that one didn't have the same effect.
Clever. So it really does seem to be about the initiation.
Right. And they also showed that xDNA is actually transcriptionally active even as the cell enters mitosis, when chromosomes are all condensed and most transcription is shut down. So it's not just a byproduct of general transcriptional activity.
Okay, that makes sense. But did they do anything to, like, really clench it? You know, absolutely confirm that it's triptylide doing this and not something else entirely?
They did. They used an antagonist of triptylide, a compound called ZL12A, and it reversed the inhibition of co-segregation. So basically, they blocked the blocker and the xDNAs started dancing together again.
That's elegant. I love when scientists pull off a move like that. It really nails down the specificity of the effect.
Absolutely. So the evidence is pretty convincing. Active transcription, especially that initiation step, seems to be playing a key role in coordinating the movement of these xDNAs during cell division.
It's a whole new layer of complexity that we never knew existed. And it opens up a whole bunch of new questions, too. What's the molecular link between transcription initiation and xDNA movement? Are there specific transcription factors or regulatory elements involved? It's like a whole new avenue of research has just opened up before us.
Absolutely. And it forces us to rethink our understanding of transcription, too. We usually think of it as this process of information flow, of making RNA from DNA. But now it seems like it's also involved in physically organizing and passing down genetic material.
It's a reminder that even the most fundamental processes in the cell are often far more intricate and interconnected than we initially realize. But before we get too lost in the weeds here, let's step back and consider the bigger picture. What does this coordinated inheritance mean for our understanding of cancer, and maybe even for treating it?
Yeah, it really changes how we view these scDNAs, right? From lone wolves to a coordinated pack, it definitely has implications for treatment. And the authors actually dove into that a bit, looking at how co-segregation affects response to targeted therapies.
Oh, yeah, that part really caught my eye, too. They did some experiments with pemigatinib, which is an FGFR2 inhibitor, and they used it on cells with both MYC and FGFR2 on separate scDNAs. So what happened when they treated those cells? Did they see that coordinated action playing out in real time?
They did. And it was a pretty striking example of this coupled dynamic we've been talking about. When they hit the cells with pemigatinib, they saw depletion of both FGFR2 and MYC scDNAs.
Wait, so even though the drug was specifically targeting FGFR2, the MYC ecDNA got taken down too, just because they were riding along together.
Exactly. It's like they were tied at the hip thanks to that co-segregation shared fate, even though they were carrying different oncogenes. It's a powerful demonstration of how this inheritance pattern can really impact how a tumor responds to treatment.
It's almost like trying to target one member of a gang but taking out the whole crew because they're always hanging out together.
That's a great analogy. It highlights the challenge we face here.
Right.
But as we've seen throughout this paper, xDNAs are tricky. They don't always play by the rules. So what do you think happened when they removed the drug pressure?
Well, given how resilient xDNAs tend to be, I'm guessing they didn't just give up and disappear.
You're right on the money. As soon as the drug was out of the picture, both the FGFR2 and MYC-EC DNAs bounced right back. Their copy numbers recovered, showing that same stubbornness we've come to expect from xDNA-driven cancers.
So it's not a simple case of hit them once and they're gone. We're dealing with a dynamic system here, constantly adapting.
Exactly. And that just makes targeting them effectively all the more challenging. This whole back and forth depletion and recovery thing has some pretty big implications for treatment strategies, don't you think?
Definitely. It suggests that maybe continuous treatment would be more effective than using intermittent doses, because those breaks could give the xDNAs a chance to regroup and build up resistance.
That's a critical point. Constant pressure might be the key to keeping those xDNA numbers down and preventing the tumor from getting a second wind.
And speaking of different treatments, the authors didn't just stop with pemigatinib, right? They tested a few other drugs too, if I remember correctly.
You've got a good memory. They did. And the results highlight just how specific this coordinated depletion effect really is. They found a similar pattern with NUTLIN-3A, which targets MDM2. This time they used a cell line with both MDM2 and MYCN on separate xcDNAs.
And I'm guessing they saw the same coordinated decrease when they hit the cells with NUTLIN-3A.
Yep. Both xcDNAs went down together. So it seems this co-segregation-driven depletion isn't a universal thing. It's tied to those targeted therapies that go after the specific oncogenes these xcDNAs are carrying.
It's like a lock and key situation.
Yeah.
The right drug hitting the right target and bringing down its partner in crime as well.
A very precise operation. And importantly, they found that general cytotoxic drugs, those broader-acting chemotherapy agents, didn't really have a reliable effect on xDNA content.
So that tells us we can't just throw the usual chemo cocktail at these xDNA-driven cancers and hope for the best.
We need those precision weapons.
Yeah.
Drugs that can zero in on the specific oncogenes driving the disease.
But even then, as we've seen with that FGFR2 integration they observed, we've got to be prepared for those sneaky resistance mechanisms popping up.
Oh, absolutely. That chromosomal integration is a stark reminder of how resourceful these cancer cells can be. They're always finding ways to slip through the cracks. But that's why this research is so valuable. It's giving us a glimpse into the enemy's playbook.
It's like we're finally getting some intel on how these sDNAs operate, and that's going to be crucial for developing smarter strategies to combat them.
Couldn't agree more. Knowledge is power, as they say, and one of the ways they gained this knowledge was through computational modeling. They created a sort of virtual battleground to study the interplay between co-selection and co-segregation.
Oh yeah, that was a fascinating part of the paper. Can you break that down for us? How did they use modeling to understand this whole xcDNA dynamic?
Sure. So they built a model that simulates how populations of xDNAs evolve within a tumor. They had two key parameters: selection coefficients, which basically represent how much of a fitness advantage each xDNA gives to the cell, and then a co-segregation coefficient, which determines how tightly linked the xDNAs are during division. Think of it like they were assigning different levels of stickiness to these virtual xDNAs.
So they're running simulations, tweaking these parameters to see how different evolutionary forces shape the fate of these xDNA populations.
Exactly. And the model spit out some pretty interesting results. It showed that while the co-occurrence of certain xDNAs was mainly driven by co-selection, meaning those that benefited the cell together tended to stick around together, the copy number correlation, that tight synchronization in their abundance, that was primarily due to co-segregation.
So co-selection explains why certain xDNA combos emerge.
Yeah.
But co-segregation is what keeps them together, ensuring they get passed down as a unit, like two peas in a pod.
A very persistent pod. And what's really cool is that the model's predictions actually lined up with what they saw in their experiments. When they plugged their real-world single-cell data into the model, the levels of co-segregation it predicted matched what they observed under the microscope.
So it's not just a theoretical exercise. This model is capturing something fundamental about how xDNA inheritance works.
It's a powerful tool for teasing apart the contributions of different evolutionary forces and for testing hypotheses about how these xDNA communities change over time.
Now, the paper mainly focuses on the co-inheritance of two xDNA species. But in reality, things are often much more complicated, right?
Oh, definitely. We know from large-scale genomic studies that many tumors have multiple AKDNA species, sometimes even five or more. Imagine the intricate web of interactions and coevolution going on in those cases.
It's like a cellular dance floor with way too many partners, all jostling for space and resources. Makes you wonder how this coordinated inheritance plays out in those crowded scenarios.
It's a fascinating question and definitely an area ripe for future research. How does the presence of three, four, or even more xcDNA species affect tumor heterogeneity, drug resistance, and ultimately patient outcomes?
So many questions yet to be answered. But even with this initial focus on two species co-inheritance, this study represents a major leap forward. It's changing the way we think about xcDNA.
It's a paradigm shift, moving away from that simplistic view of xcDNAs as independent actors and embracing the complexity of their interactions and coordinated behavior.
A shift that has major implications for how we approach cancer diagnosis treatment and even our basic understanding of the disease itself.
Couldn't have said it better myself. This is groundbreaking work with the potential to reshape the field of cancer genomics.
And beyond the implications for cancer specifically, this research also raises some really intriguing questions about cell biology in general.
Absolutely. It challenges that traditional view of inheritance where genetic information is neatly packaged and passed down on chromosomes. These xcDNAs are like rogue agents operating outside the usual genetic playbook. They've got a level of plasticity and adaptability that we're just beginning to grasp.
It makes you wonder if there might be other extra chromosomal elements out there, maybe smaller and harder to detect, that also play a role in cellular processes, even in non-cancerous contexts.
And that's a thought-provoking idea. What if these elements are more widespread than we realize, influencing gene expression, cell behavior, and maybe even evolution itself?
This study has really opened our eyes to a hidden world within the cell, a world that's far more dynamic and complex than we ever imagined.
It's a good reminder that we're still just scratching the surface when it comes to understanding the intricacies of life. There's so much more to uncover.
Speaking of uncovering, the methods they used in this paper were truly impressive.
They really went all out, didn't they? A sophisticated blend of cutting-edge techniques to build their case for xcDNA co-inheritance.
From single-cell sequencing to those advanced imaging techniques, mathematical modeling, and those cleverly designed drug treatments, their experimental approach was incredibly thorough. A real testament to the power of interdisciplinary research, bringing together expertise from different fields to tackle a complex problem.
And the results speak for themselves. They've generated a mountain of data that not only supports their main hypothesis, but also opens up a whole new world of research questions.
I was also really impressed by how rigorously they addressed those potential alternative explanations.
Yeah, they didn't shy away from exploring those other possibilities like hyperreplication or simple co-selection. But through those carefully designed experiments and their insightful data analysis, they systematically ruled out those alternatives. It really strengthens their conclusions.
Of course, no scientific study is perfect, and this one does have its limitations.
True. One thing is that their work was primarily focused on a few specific cancer cell lines.
And while they did look at some patient tumor data, it would be valuable to see these findings replicated in a larger and more diverse group of patients across different cancer types and populations.
Definitely. That would give us a much clearer picture of how widespread this xcDNA co-inheritance really is and how it varies across different cancers.
And another area for future research is to dig deeper into those molecular mechanisms that drive this coordinated segregation.
We've got good evidence pointing to transcription initiation as a key player, but the exact details are still fuzzy. What are the specific molecules involved? How do they orchestrate this whole intricate dance?
Those are all questions waiting to be answered. And they're going to fuel a lot of exciting new research in the years to come. But even with these limitations in mind, this study has significantly advanced our understanding of xcDNA and its role in cancer.
It's a real game changer, pushing us to rethink our assumptions and approach this disease from a fresh perspective.
And that's what makes science so captivating. The constant evolution of knowledge, challenging the status quo, and that relentless pursuit of understanding the world around us.
Well said. And on that note, I think we're ready to wrap up this deep dive and highlight the key takeaways.
Absolutely. Let's distill what we've learned.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's recap what we've learned about this whole xcDNA co-inheritance thing. What are the big takeaways?
Well, I think the first one is that these distinct xcDNA species in cancer cells, they're not just randomly hanging out together. They actually co-segregate during cell division. They move together in this really coordinated way.
It's like they're a team or a little posse.
Right. And that coordinated inheritance is driven by those intermolecular interactions we talked about. And Surprisingly, it seems to be linked to active transcription too. That's a pretty big deal. It suggests a level of organization and cooperation among these extrachromosomal elements that we're just beginning to understand.
It really challenges our old assumptions about xDNAs behaving as independent units. They're not just lone wolves anymore. They're working together.
Exactly. And that brings us to the second takeaway, I think. This coordinated inheritance has some major implications for how we think about treating cancer, especially when it comes to targeted therapies.
Because if you take out one xDNA, you might be taking out its buddies too, right?
Exactly. And that could be a good thing, potentially wiping out multiple oncogenic drivers at once. But we also have to be aware of those resistance mechanisms, like that chromosomal integration we talked about. It shows just how adaptable these xDNAs can be.
So it's not going to be easy to exploit this co-segregation for therapeutic purposes, but the potential is definitely there.
It's a whole new frontier in cancer research, and it's going to require some really creative thinking and innovative approaches, but the payoff could be huge.
So to sum it all up, xDNAs are more complex and dynamic than we ever imagined. They're not just passive passengers in cancer. They're active participants working together to drive tumor growth and evolution.
And understanding how they operate, how they cooperate, and how they resist our attempts to target them. That's going to be crucial for developing more effective treatments.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty energized after this deep dive.
Me too. It's always exciting to see research that challenges the status quo and opens up new avenues of inquiry.
It's a reminder that science is a constantly evolving process, and there's always more to learn and discover.
And that's what makes it so much fun.
Couldn't agree more. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but we hope you enjoyed this deep dive into the fascinating world of xDNA co-inheritance.
And be sure to join us next time for another exploration of cutting-edge research.
Until then, keep those scientific minds engaged, and remember to stay curious.